The title, I don't normally give titles for my sermons, but I came up with a title for this sermon. And the title is not going to make much sense at the very beginning, but I'm hoping that at the end, the title that I have will make some sense. So the title of this sermon, if you want to write it down, making notes, put it on the DVDs or whatever, the title is Davy Crockett, Gypsies, and Dinosaur Boy. So Davy Crockett, Gypsies, and Dinosaur Boy. And that sounds like a B-movie. That's, you know, unusual. Like, how am I going to fit Davy Crockett, Gypsies, and Dinosaur Boy into this sermon about this last great day? Well, we're going to talk about that. And you'll see, hopefully, by the end, you'll understand why Davy Crockett, Gypsies, and Dinosaur Boy have something in common. I want to be a better person. I want to be a better person. I wanted to be a better person when I was baptized. Is that the way y'all felt who were baptized? I wanted to be a better person. That's why I came to God. I knew that I was corrupted. I knew the world was corrupted. But I wanted something better. I wanted something better. Do you want to be better people? Is that why we're here? We want to be better people. I want to be a better person. I want a better life. Do you want a better life? We want a better life. And don't misunderstand me. I do appreciate the life that I've been given because I'm a very happy person. Very happy person. And I'm very grateful for living in this country that we have. I am so grateful that I was born here and not somewhere else, because the odds are, should have been born somebody else. So kind of like if we're in this country, we kind of won a lottery, so to speak, to be a part of this country. Circumstances could have been much better. Much worse, actually. Much worse for us. But I know that this life that we have will end. This life we have will end. I remember it was 19 years ago. I was with my grandmother. I had four grandparents and lost them all. And she was the last one that we lost. So I was with my grandmother. And the other ones I didn't really see go. But on this occasion, we were there in the hospital with my grandmother. Has anybody ever been with loved ones in the hospital? I think we have. And maybe we've lost a few. And I was with my grandmother. And I was there with my cousin, who is a Baptist preacher. And we were there with my grandmother. And my mom and my aunt, they were outside the room because they couldn't be in there, because my grandmother was dying. And we were with her. And her lungs were filling up with fluid. I don't know if you're familiar with this happens. There wasn't much they could do but to make her feel comfortable the best she could. And so as she was in the room, her lungs were filling up with fluid. And I grabbed her hand and held her hand. And my cousin held her hand. And she really, she was in pain. And it was, and that's not a way we want to go, is it? To have that happen. And she looked at me, and she looked at my cousin, she looked at us, and she said, "Please pray with me. Pray for me." And so we took her hand, and we prayed for her. We said a prayer with her as she was leaving this life. And it was painful. I wanted something better for her. I wanted something better for her. It's hard to go that way. Wanted something better for her life. And do we all want better for our families, don't we? Right? We all want something better for our families. And that was, again, a rough way to go. Tragedy, pain, suffering, hunger, injustice, poverty, slavery, war, violence. We see these every day. Those are the conditions that most people throughout the years have been born into. Most, if you look at the statistics, that's why I say we are lucky. Most everyone has been born into one of those conditions. More than 3 billion people in the world today, that's half the people in the world, live on less than $2.50 a day. Can $2.50 a day get us that bite at the feast? No. That's 3 billion people live on less than $2.50 a day. 1.3 billion people in this world live on less than $1.25 a day. 1 billion of those are children. 1 billion children in poverty in this world. This world is not God's world yet, is it? This is Satan's world. Satan's governments, Satan's world, that's the results. Half the world is in poverty. We have war. We have violence. Most of the people would love to be where we are in this world. But I'm lucky. I think we're lucky. Born into a country with a lot of advantages. And we've had opportunities to make things better. So I work hard because I want to be better. I want to be a better person. So we're here. We've kept the Feast of Tabernacles. We're observing this last great day. Why? I believe it's because we want something better. We want something better. Again, most of us are citizens of this country. I guess, do we have people from other countries here? I know we have Canada over here. But a lot of us are from this country. And if we're from America, don't we think that we are the best? And I guess, do you think Canada's the best? Well, I don't want to ask. Oh, we won't ask him. But all right. So we a lot of times, for whatever country, we kind of have this mentality. This is the best place. We're the best. And again, I think we have a great country as far as the opportunities we have. But again, people from Canada, I guess, Germany, Russia, Korea, may have similar feelings about their countries. And there's other people that they just love their country and they have those type of feelings about their countries. We're here keeping this day because we know the kingdom of God is better than this, better than the rest of the world. Revelation 21:4. There's one verse here. It says, "And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, no crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away." That right there, that's the end. That's the ultimate fulfillment of what this world needs, is in that verse. No more pain, no more crying, nor sorrow. And we have so much of that in the world. I believe we've had 108 billion people have lived throughout all of history is what they've calculated. 108 billion people. Wow. And they have not experienced this yet. So this is the ultimate fulfillment, the very last day, ultimately fulfilled. Let's go to John 7. It was read yesterday, but I want to emphasize a little bit different. In John chapter 7, verse 37. On that last day, the great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, If anyone thirst, let him come to me and drink. And this, it was explained very well yesterday what that means. He who believes in me, as the scriptures have said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. Well, today, I submit to you that everyone is thirsty. Every one of the 108 billion people who have ever lived, right? Because that's a common thing we have. Remember the Day of Atonement? That's thirsty, right? So we know thirsty. Everyone is thirsty for what Christ has. They may not know it. Most of them never knew it. But everyone is thirsty. Everyone wants something better. Turn to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis 12, verse 12. Now the Lord had said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And in you all the families of the earth, every nation shall be blessed. Now, as things go, Abraham wasn't very bad off. He had possessions. He had servants. He had a beautiful wife. I mean, you know, I'd take that. I'd just take those things right there. The possessions, the servant, he had a wife. He was 75, but the thing that probably was a disappointment in his life is that he was childless. He had no children. He had no children. And so that was that. I imagine it was a very major disappointment for him and for Sarah. Is there anyone in here who's 75 or older? I imagine there is. All right. So imagine God telling you, get up right now, go to a land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation. You know, that's, wow. After his long-lived life, now God has something for him. Something better. Something better that will benefit everyone. Benefit everyone. He would make him a great nation. Childless Abraham would be a great nation, and his name would be great. And so he left. Let's go to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11, verse 8. So it says, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place where he would receive his inheritance. And he went, not knowing where he was going. Hebrews 11, verse 9. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise, in a foreign country, dwelling in tents, right? What we've been doing in nice, really nice tents that we've been dwelling for these 8 days, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. That city is something better. That city is something better for everyone. There's a lot of talk, I guess, in politics about immigration. I could safely say that that's true. There's a lot of talk about immigration. We have immigration, you know, discussions in our country. We have Syrians who are going all over the world, and there's a lot of, you know, things, problems that come from immigration. So the president, in the presidential race, they talk about it, they ask some questions. The Pope, news, others talk about it. So again, I'm not going to offer any political perspective on it. That's not my job. But I do want to look at it from a biblical perspective. A biblical perspective of immigration. Because the interesting thing about immigrants, I guess legal or illegal, and whether they come to this country, or they go to Australia, Russia, Germany, Israel, wherever somebody wants to immigrate, they're looking for something better. They go there, for the most part, they're looking for something better. If it wasn't for immigrants, none of us would be here, would we? We would be back wherever if people weren't looking for something better. We know that civilization began in the Middle East. After the Tower of Babel, right? Remember the Tower of Babel? People separated and they migrated all over the world from the Tower of Babel. And we know the Americas were most likely first populated by people who were entering into Alaska, I guess I believe there's a land bridge or a lot of ice or whatever. They were able to walk into Alaska. And so some folks got into Alaska, and they're like, some people were like, well, this is pretty good. And some were like, I want something better. And so the ones who wanted something better said, you know, it's a little cold. I want something warmer. And they went down south. And some said, there's not enough of it for us. So some of them went east. And so people migrated from Alaska across North America into, you know, down here to Florida, down through Mexico, all the way to South America. And I guess because, whatever, they were, you know, through wars, migrations, there's, I guess, a whole history of that. I believe they want something better. And I believe there's something built into us. Something built into us for that. And again, regardless of how we feel about the political implications, because that's not my job to talk about that, and the huge problems that arise from illegal immigration, even illegal immigration, I understand why. I understand why somebody would want to go somewhere else. Because they want something better. They found water on Mars. You hear that? Last week they found water on Mars. And guess what? Somebody's going to go to Mars, because they're going to be like, this Earth, y'all can have it. We're going to Mars, and we're going to make a great place for us. And people, if things play out, are going to go to Mars and look for something better on Mars. It's what we do. Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. This is another verse. You can turn there if you like. Genesis 1, verse 28. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. To dominate the planet. All right, I have to wear contacts. Or sometimes I wear glasses. So I see people out here who have glasses, so some of you will understand what I'm saying. Some probably have contacts, will understand as well. I cannot see very well without these in my eyes. I mean, this is bad. I can't get into a car and drive anywhere. I've tried where, like, my contacts were really dry one day and I drew them away. I said, I'll just drive home. Oh, it was rough. It was rough going without vision to get home. I mean, I can't really see. I probably will walk around in my house and bump into things because my vision is that bad. But with contacts and some reading glasses, I can get around, I can see. So that's what happens. So I found out that the first eyeglasses were made only in the 13th century in Italy. So for only the last 700 years, give or take, 700 years, people have been able to have corrected vision. So all the time before that, if you were like me, you were just running into stuff or not going very far, or just trying to keep things close to you to see with your vision. And the thing is, they haven't been able to figure out who invented eyeglasses, whether it was a man or a woman, but they know it originated somewhere in Italy. But I tell you what, I know why they invented eyeglasses. Because they wanted to see. They wanted to see. That's the reason why we invent things. I believe, this is my personal opinion, that the adversities, the problems, the handicaps that we have in our, that we have in this design of this creation, there's certain things that are challenges to us. Eyesight was one. I think we beat it for the most part. You can even have laser vision, you know, lasers can go in there and fix it up for you. The printing press was invented because it'd be easier to publish. So all we have opportunities, we have challenges, but then the command to subdue the earth, well, we meet those challenges. We beat those challenges. The telephone, we can talk over long distances. The airplane, that helps. Computers, or the phones we have, which are our personal computers we walk around with, they help us some way to do things better or even worse. You know, you could debate about that. But they're there to solve a problem because we want something better. We want to be able to say, you know, tell Siri to remind us to do something later. We want those kind of those things. Every invention solves a problem. Google's working on it and Apple's working on it on driverless cars. I saw a news report about this in the past week. Because they say, I don't know if I believe them, but they say that driverless cars will prevent all types of accidents in our country. Where I think we may have 30,000 fatalities a year, And back before we had safety and seatbelts, we were having 100,000 a year. So we've gotten better with safety because we wanted to make it better. And they say, hey, driverless cars, let Siri drive or Google drive. There won't be any accidents. So I don't really know. I'm kind of skeptical. But they're doing that because they want to make it better. That's the way we are. I've been living in Texas, as he mentioned. I'm working for CGI for our marketing and evangelism department. And I've been living in Texas for 3 years now. So I came to Texas as an immigrant, so to speak. And I did it because, I saw we had our website. And I said, you know what? I think I can help make that website better. And some other things. I said, God's given me some gifts. We already have a strong team. I could be a part of that. Let's do it better. What can I help to help y'all do something better? And so I went there seeking opportunity for the church and for myself. I said, well, this is a good career opportunity. Other things I was doing was like, I could leave it or whatever. But this, I love doing it. So I've been in Texas for 3 years. Any Texans here? I know we have a Texan right there. Any other Texans? We got one Texan right here. We got a Texan. Yeehaw. All right. So I've been in Texas for 3 years. And I was surprised to find out that the most revered and sacred place in Texas, and I'll explain it in detail, so the most revered and sacred place in Texas was a shrine to honor illegal immigrants. You're like, what? I know how people in Texas feel about illegal immigration, so why is there a shrine in Texas that was built, that's there, that honors illegal immigrants? Well, this is going to take some explanation, isn't it? To explain why this is. And that place is called the Alamo. The Alamo. And I went there when I was much younger. And it's actually in San Antonio. And it's in a city. And you're looking for it. And it's just the church. It's not that impressive. And so I was like, well, this is all right. So we wanted to go. So my parents and I were there. And my family said, let's go to the place where they actually filmed the Alamo with John Wayne. And I went there. And it was out there in the west. And you had the fake Alamo, but I like the fake Alamo better, I'm sorry. The fake Alamo, and they had gunfights, and it was like it was like a lot of fun. I was like, this is the Alamo from the movies. That's the one I remember. And it sounds bizarre, right? Living in Texas, these things. So at the time, right, the reason why I say it's dedicated to illegal immigrants is because at the time, when they were at the Alamo, they were illegal because it was Mexico. Right, Texas was Mexico. Now, Mexico at the time, they weren't doing a good job with Texas. It was a terrible place under Mexico. Terrible place under Mexico. And many of the men who fought weren't Mexican citizens, but they fought bravely. Right, they fought bravely at the Alamo, but they were all. If you know about the Alamo, they were all killed. They were all killed. And this defeat at the Alamo caused the people who were settling in Texas and others to join the army from around, and they eventually went on to win independence for Texas. And I'm happy about that. I'm happy now, because we wouldn't be able to have a headquarters there if it wasn't for the events of these people. So that leads me to the first part of my title, which is Davy Crockett. Davy Crockett, because Davy Crockett he actually died at the Alamo. So Davy Crockett. And actually, there's no evidence that anybody at the time called him Davy. They called him David, but I guess Davy comes from the TV show. And there's no evidence at all that he killed a bar when he was only three. No evidence that he killed a bar when he was three. But it's in the song. But he's American folk legend. A lot comes from a book that it was called A Narrative of the Life of David Crockett, written by himself. And he was eventually, so after all his adventures and stuff, he was eventually a Tennessee congressman in 1825 for Congress. And while he was in Congress, he was a big opponent to Andrew Jackson. You heard of Andrew Jackson. He was a big opponent of Andrew Jackson's. And one of the things that he was really upset was the Indian Removal Act. Have you heard of the Indian Removal Act? It's what caused the Trail of Tears. And basically, Jackson and them, they wanted to take the Indians who lived in the southeast, and we want to take them, and we want to migrate them all to Oklahoma. And Davy Crockett didn't like this, and so he was vocal about it. He was the only one in Tennessee who said, well, these people, this is their land. They live here. We're coming in their land. And he fought against it, but he lost. And he lost a lot of political fights because of this, and so he lost his place in Congress because of his fight for this. I think he eventually won it again for a couple of years, but I guess with Davy, the politics in Congress and thing really kind of wore him out, and he lost again. And so there's a famous quote from him in the newspapers at the time that he, you know, lost his place in Congress. And he says, and this is a quote from Davy Crockett, says, "I told the people of my district that I would serve them as faithfully as I had done, but if not, they might go to hell, and I would go to Texas." So that was Davy Crockett. So in January of 1836, Davy Crockett and 65 other men, and he brought some people with him who were followers of him, they went to Texas, and they signed up for the Texas Army, who were opposed to the Mexican government. And they were promised 4,600 acres. That's a lot of land in Texas. I mean, 4,600 acres apiece for fighting an army. So that's a really good incentive. And yes, technically they were illegals, but they were revolutionaries. They were looking for opportunity. I mean, some of them had committed crimes in the United States. And a good place to get that in the past, it's like, we're going to start a new life in Texas. Let's go join this army. Texas is my new home. And I'm sure, actually, Davy had really big plans for his political career in Texas. He goes, I'll get to Texas, we'll fight, and then I can really do something in Texas. He had some really big political plans. But you know, sadly, I guess, a couple of months later, he died at the Alamo. But arguably, if it wasn't for their defeat, there wouldn't be a Texas as we know it today. You know, what was the battle cry that won Texas? You know, a Texan? Remember the Alamo. Remember the Alamo. And they used that battle cry, and the Texas defeated Santa Anna. And unfortunately, all of the folks who fought, at least in that battle, they died. They didn't see something better yet, but that's what they wanted. Continue in Hebrews 11, verse 13. Referring to Abraham and all patriarchs, it says, Hebrews 11, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth." You know, the folks at Alamo didn't receive any benefits as well, if you look at it. But that's who we are. We all are strange. I tell you, we're strange. We're strange. I'm some strangers and pilgrims on this earth. That's why we're here. That's why we're gathered together. Verse 14, "For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them." A city. She sang about it already, but we'll read about it. It's prepared a city for them. Actually, for everybody. They just don't know it yet. They just don't know it yet. So seeking a physical homeland is one thing. Didn't work out for Davy so much. I mean, he wanted something better, fought bravely. Not good for him, great for us in Texas. Great for everybody else who benefit from that. And it doesn't work out for a lot of people. Sometimes it does. Our part of this country is great because we at the feast, here at the Last Great Day, are reminded that we are strangers and we're pilgrims. And the country, this country, even though I love it, right, this world can never be our home. Never really truly be our home. But although we're a part of it. Because life, very temporary, is very fleeting. James chapter 4, just a couple of verses of James 4. James 4 verse 13 says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away." Right? Life is so short. And so we were reminded of that the feast is so short. This day is so short. It's over. It ends in, 7-Eleven. It's over. And is it just me, or as I get older, does time seem to move faster? Everybody kind of says, oh yeah, it does kind of move faster. Because when I was 10, the 3 months of summer, they lasted forever. Y'all remember, summer's like, oh, summer lasts forever. But as you get older, it goes by quicker. And somebody, described it to me this way. Like when you're 10 years old, a year is only 1/10 of your life. So I'm 45. So now a year is 1/45 of my life. And when you're 60, a year is 1/60 of your life. And when you're 75, it's 1/75 of your life. So it seems like it's a smaller part of your life, because it is. And so it goes by faster. And then, you know, some people will say the universe has been here 13.8 billion years. Some may disagree, but I think it's been around for a long time. The best we can measure it. And what is this short life that we have, the short life that we have in small existence, compared to that? Because before I was born, before everyone here was born, all of those years, everything and everyone went on without you. Right? I can't believe that. The universe went on and I wasn't here. It was going on fine. Didn't need me. But then, you know, the miracle, we are here. And now that I'm here, is that all that it is? Right? A lot of people say, that's all we have. It's just this short life and it's over with. Because it's like a vapor. Is that all we have, just a few short years, then die, and it's all life is for. For the 108 billion people who have all ever lived and died, is that all it ever was? Just to have a short, you know, 80 years, 100 years, 120 years, if you're lucky, on this earth. I had a lot of admiration for movie critic Roger Ebert. Is anybody familiar with Roger Ebert, the movie critic? And mostly because he was a good communicator, and he really understood movies, and I like movies. And so I like to read about somebody who understands movies and talks about movies. What makes them good, what makes them bad. And so I read a lot of his reviews in his career. And early on, it seemed like he believed in God. He wrote a lot of things about God as he was talking about movies. But as life went on for Ebert, he developed cancer. And he went from being kind of a believer to an agnostic, to an atheist. And so this is something he wrote right before he died. And to me, it's kind of sad, but I'm going to read it for you. Because this is what so many people believe their hope is. He said this right before his death. He says, I know it is coming, and I do not fear it, because I believe there is nothing on the other side of death to fear. I hope to be spared as much pain as possible in the approach path. I was perfectly content before I was born, and I think of death as the same state. What I am grateful for is the gift of intelligence and for life, love, wonder, and laughter. You can't say it wasn't interesting. My lifetime's memories are what I have brought home from the trip. I will require them for eternity no more than that little souvenir of the Eiffel Tower I brought home from Paris. Now, it's written pretty, but it's a sad thought. Life is no better than a souvenir. And that's it. And so many people, more and more people are thinking that, you know, that's all we got. This short life. But we're here, why? Because we want something better. We want something better. I don't want my life just to be a souvenir or just a memory for some. I want something better from life. You know, like God told Abraham, go to a land I will show you. I think we've done that. We've all probably answered that call. All right, so we talked about Davy Crockett. We're going to talk about gypsies. Gypsies is next. So gypsies are known as the Romani people. The Romani people today are a people without a homeland. They are pejoratively referred to as gypsies. You know, like any ethnic group, some of them are okay being called gypsies. Some of them do not want to be called it because they find it offensive. So it's kind of either way. And the gypsies, or the Romani, most likely originated from northern India after warfare, most likely displaced them over 1,000 years ago. And we know that from DNA testing. They really, because the Romani people just kind of showed up in Europe, and they didn't know where they came from. And so through DNA testing, because they had no written history, and they had no oral history. They have a lot of customs, but it was just a people without a homeland that just kind of was there. And there are an estimated 12 million Romani living in Europe. And in America, at least 1 million people who are Romani. And there may be, I'm sure there's some in the church who are of that ethnic group. And there's the traditional Romani or gypsy wagon. You're familiar with the gypsy wagon? I think we've seen that. I saw it, I was watching, I'm doing my research for this on YouTube for the sermon. That's where I do my research. And I'm watching Cher had a music video, like gypsies, tramps and thieves. That's the best I can do with her. But y'all know what I'm talking about, right? And if you watch that, be warned if you watch that, gypsies, tramps and thieves, it will be in your head all day long and you will be singing it. But she's singing and she's dressed kind of like a gypsy and there's a wagon behind her. And so that's the idea we have of gypsies. The Hunchback of Notre Dame, if you read that novel, talks about the Romani people, gypsies. There's an Andy Griffith episode. You watch Andy Griffith? Jamie Farr, he played the gypsy and he put a curse on the town of Mayberry in the Andy Griffith episode. You may remember that episode. So we have all this, you know, it's in the culture. We're aware of the gypsy culture. And there's a lot of stereotypes, like with any people. And the Romanis wandered, and they still wander. They are still a people without a homeland. Still a people without a homeland. And because they are people without a homeland, they have been highly discriminated against. The Czech Republic, Slovakia, Germany, Norway, Sweden, and Switzerland, they have had overt and hidden policies of sterilizing Romani. So we're going to sterilize these people because we don't want no more of them. We don't know where they come from, and we don't want them. So they are associated in people with Europe as having high crime rates, and they living poorly, and they're less civilized than others because they're nomads. And so that's the kind of, you know, discrimination that they have. As recently as in 2008, the Italian government declared the Romanis a national security risk. So that's the view that they have. In World War II, along with the Jewish people, Hitler and the Germans, they exterminated over 1 million Romani. And there's a similarity to the Jews, isn't there? The Jews were a people with a unique culture. They knew where they came from, a little different, without a homeland until 1948. But, and again, the same kind of discrimination. And they have, you know, we have a lot of similarities, as we're talking about, with the, with Israel and the Jewish culture. So now we as a Christian people, we as Christians, we are a unique culture. We are a unique culture. Like the Romani is a culture and they are a culture. We are a culture. We are a people. A people without a homeland right now, but we are a people. First Peter chapter 2 verse 1 says, therefore, laying aside all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking, as newborn babes desire the pure milk of the word, that ye may grow thereby, if indeed you have tasted that the Lord is gracious. So 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 4 says, coming to him, coming to Christ, as to a living stone, rejected indeed by men. So we are rejected by men. We are rejected by men because we're odd, we're unusual, we're a culture that's different from the mainstream. We're rejected by men, but chosen by God and precious. We're precious to God. So to be chosen by God is to be rejected by men. Because we're seen as a strange people. Why? We have unusual customs. You know, he was talking earlier about, you know, try describing the Feast of Tabernacles. I described the Feast of Tabernacles and what I was doing to my neighbor. I was like, well, I'm going down to Florida and we'll, you know, the church people and you know how to describe it to them in the Bible and, you know, you're trying to describe what the Feast of Tabernacles is and they're just like, okay. I mean, it just kind of like goes over their head because it's so different. Our culture is so different. We're so unique as the people of God in what we do. We eat different food. I mean, you know, if you're around a lot of people in the Church of God, it's hard to find turkey bacon in the store. You know, we're that kind of people. Very unusual. And so now earlier, Bill read some comments from Facebook. That's comments that people go and they rate us on Facebook. And those are the 5 out of 5 stars. And actually, our rating, we have an average, and it's not 5, it's actually 4.7 out of 5. Because there are some people who don't like us. And so I'm going to read a few of those. All right, so I'm gonna read. So we read the positive things. Yeehaw, we're doing great. We're going to read the negative and see how people actually perceive us, right? Because we're different. We're unusual. We're a unique culture. And so and again, the positive far outranked the negative. The negative we're going to take note of. So here's some negative from Facebook. Dan M. He says, they cherry pick all the nice things from the Bible that you might want it to, but they don't hide the horrible things. The Bible is pro-slavery, anti-woman, and anti-free thought. Okay, that's what they think about us. Brian B. says, and I got to take some water because he's got some lung. All right, Brian B. says about us, watch out for this group. They call mainstream Christians falsely so-called. They are a cult. They are in the famous book, Kingdom of the Cults. They believe in Old Testament laws. They celebrate a lot of Old Testament feast days. Yeah, okay. And believe that all Christians are bound to follow them. Yeah, okay, well, all right. They are Judaizers. They fail to recognize that the Old Testament feast pointed to Jesus. Do we fail to recognize that? This is all what this is about. This is all about Jesus Christ. It's what we're doing. But he says we fail to recognize it. And Christ fulfilled all requirements of the lawless before you support them. And then I got Sharon, and she's from Arlington, Texas. She's from Texas, but she don't like us. But I'm going to read what she has to say. So Sharon from Texas. All right, it says, your church has to be among one of the most powerfully oppressive cults of all. You skewed teachings are nothing more than a vile form of mental abuse that beat down people's value, worth, and self-esteem. Your cult demands its members to accept the absurd notion that they are all born as vile, depraved sinners, worthy of every evil and harmful act that happens to them. Nothing could be more reprehensible and further from the truth than your insane religious ideologies. That's some pretty bad stuff. That's bad stuff they got to write about us. So we are unique. We're all different. Now, I remember when I was in high school, and I wasn't in the church when I was in high school. I didn't come to the church until I was like 23. So I was in high school, and I was like 16. I had a friend who kept the Feast of Tabernacles. He was in the Church of God. And I didn't like it. I didn't like the fact that he got to leave for 2 weeks. Right? And they're like, we're stuck doing work. And he would come back, and he's like, yeah, we were at Disney World and all that. I was like, Feast of Tabernacles, what is this? And so I looked it up in the Bible. I was like, hey, his name was Paul. I said, Paul, feast is only 8 days. Where are y'all going for 2 weeks? 2 weeks and a few days. I was like, there's something I don't, you know, what's going on, Paul? So I was a little trying to question him. He was always talking about Nimrod and pagan things. And he had a pizza with like pepperoni. He pulled off the pepperoni and ate it with cheese. I was like, this is a bizarre guy here. And he would talk about Leviticus 11, which I went and looked it up. I said, Leviticus 11, let me go look this up. And so he was always talking about these things. And so one year he went away to the Feast of Tabernacles, and we didn't like it. So it was me and a few other people, and we decided that we were going to do something to kind of get back at him. So there's lockers at school, and so the locker that he had was a bottom locker. And so the locker above him, nobody had it. And so you could actually pull open that thing above the locker. And so we decided just to put our trash in there, you know, for what, 2 weeks, you know, have an old banana peel or old sandwich or whatever, rotten egg or whatever. We would just, throughout the weeks during the Feast of Tabernacles, we would throw just, you know, trash in there. And so 2 weeks was over and he came back. And I was like, he's come back. And there's trash in that locker. And so I was sitting on a stairwell where I could kind of get a view. So I was up on the stairwell. And so he's down there at his locker and I'm just kind of, yes, I wanted to, you know, witness the glory of when he opened the locker and all this trash, stinking trash came out. I'd be like, happy Feast of Tabernacles. Right? Happy Feast of Tabernacles. And so he opens it up and the trash comes out and he just gets really angry. And he gets really upset. I mean, I guess it's pretty bad. It was pretty bad. I mean, you know, garbage. And he's really angry about this and upset. And a teacher comes along. And she's down there, and I'm still sitting up on the stairwell looking down, and the teacher's looking at it. She goes, you know what? I bet it was that Jeff Reed guy. And I was like, uh-oh. And so I went running up the stairways to get away from it. And I was like, wow, they figured out it was me. I mean, I had done some things before. I mean, you ever put a textbook in a microwave? Don't do that. Don't do that. So I'd done some things before, and I was traced to that, so I was known that Jeff probably did this. But the thing is, when he was there, his locker and the trash came out, and I was up there, and it was like, oh, this is kind of bad, right? He's upset. I've upset him. It's not as fun as I thought it was going to be. And then when she said, Jeff is a troublemaker, I felt really bad. I wanted something better. I wanted to be a better person. And I never did anything like that before. Again, I wanted to be a better person. And so I guess, I don't know if Paul figured out it was me. Probably suspected it was. And I mean, I saw him later in college. And so when I came into the truth, you know, because he was very influential. I was like, I looked up all the stuff he was telling me about. And some other things that came into my life. And so I was in the church when I was 23. So I'm going to see what happened to Paul. And so I tried to ask some people what happened to him. Say, well, I want to find Paul because he's the guy that put trash in his locker. And I found out that he had committed suicide. I mean, years later, it wasn't nothing to do with me, but I mean, he had committed suicide. And I was like, wow. I just wanted that to go better. I mean, this family wanted something better for him. He was a skilled, talented, kid. Could have done so much. So that didn't work out. It didn't work out for him. Let's go back to 1 Peter 2. 1 Peter 2. Verse 5, it says, you also, right, as living stones are being built up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ, right? Because we are the temple of God. Therefore, it is also contained in Scripture, behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious, and he who believes in him will by no means be put to shame. Skip down to verse 9. But you, right, again, us, Paul was at the time, we are, you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood. We are a holy nation, a unique people, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into marvelous light. In verse 10, who once were not a people, right? We're a strange lot. How would this group of people ever come together if it wasn't for God? Right? We were once not a people, but now, right now, through whatever circumstances brought us here, we are the people of God who have not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. So as we keep the Feast of Tabernacles, and we keep the last great day, I think we're on a thing called feast time. Feast time. And I've been keeping the feast since 93. And it's feast time. It's like every time I'm here, it's like I'm back at the feast. I feel like I was just here. Feast time is what we have. And it was, and when 93 was the first time, you remember your first feast or the first time you embraced this? It was the first time that I embraced the culture of the nation of God. Was at the Feast of Tabernacles. And we are a people, and our nation is the kingdom of God. It's not here yet. So my first feast, I stayed at a CGI feast site, had $150. Had $150. I mean, $150 is like one day here, but I had $150. And I stayed. And you know what? I found a place, $80 for the week. Had a friend in the church said, we all got a place, $80 for the week. I was like, $80 for the week? I'm there. And it was called The Rest a While. The Rest a While. And you know, that's $10 a day. And I could describe the entire structure of The Rest a While. I guess how it was built. It was termites holding hands. Right? So termites holding hands, that's The Rest a While. That's where I stayed. And they were fumigating. So I was in one part of The Rest a While, and they were fumigating on the other part. So where they were fumigating, they were sending the bugs to me. They were coming my way. But again, it was a great feast. A great feast. And so this, We talked about Davy Crockett. We talked about gypsies. Well, this is where I encountered Dinosaur Boy. Dinosaur Boy at the feast. Because we were saying there was a boy who was there who, I guess he had been watching Jurassic Park or watching too much TV. He wanted to act like a dinosaur. And so my friends, they stayed on the other side of the hotel. And so I would have to go over there to get with them, to get a ride, to go to the feast. And so when I would go walking, I go walking over there, Dinosaur Boy would be there. And so Dinosaur Boy, he'd come out, he'd be like, and so I'd be like, whoa, 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 okay. You know, I was like, that's strange. And so every day, right, Dinosaur Boy would be playing, but he would see me come, and then he'd just, and I just, okay, you gotta stay. So I would keep my distance from the Dinosaur Boy. And he was there. Because his family, you know, they were immigrants. They were immigrants and they were staying in this cheap motel because it's what they could afford. And they were working around trying to build a better life for themselves. They were trying to build a better life, building up some of the infrastructure there in Panama City Beach. And Dinosaur Boy was just running loose. And so I was thinking about it. He's grown now. He's probably 30 something. So he's Dinosaur Man, or I don't know, but he's grown. And but the first time in the feast, and I think about that first feast, and I think about this feast, I think about every feast that I've been a part of, and the time that we have together, even though that was the feast of poverty, I guess, it's time that we are thinking about something better, right? The first 7 days, we're thinking about the kingdom of God. Today is the day that we're reminded of something better for the billions and billions of people who have lived. Right? Because we're going to look at that something better. The something better. That they don't know about it. But here in this day represents something better for Davy Crockett. This day right here is something better for the Romani, for the gypsies. For Dinosaur Boy. And his family, for Roger Ebert, for my grandmother who, you know, pray for me. I wanted something better. There's something better. Even though, she went the way she did, there's something better for her. There's something better. My friend Paul, I wanted something better. I thought it would be better, seeming something better. For everyone. Because like Jesus said, all who thirst, come to me. Everyone is thirsty. They just don't know it. They just don't know it. Revelation 20, verse 11. Revelation 20, verse 11. So here is that hope. Here is that, where we're part of a nation now, here's where this uniqueness, this people that we are, and all that we're preparing for, and all that's going to happen in the kingdom of God is going to come together for those 108 billion people who stand before God and going to be offered something better. Revelation 20, verse 11. Then I saw a great white throne and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no small place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God. Billions and billions of people standing before God. I mean, I see what a football stadium holds. That's 100,000. I can't even think of what a million people, that's 10 of those. A billion people, that's 1,000 of those. 100 times those, that's what you have. Standing before God. And the books were opened. And another book was open, which is the book of life. Right? The books are open, the Bible's open, the books are open, the book of life is open. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books. And that's a tremendous, tremendous for everyone to know what you know, to experience the joy that we've been given as a nation of God. Everyone can experience something better. Billions will finally have what they've been looking for. right? The billions of people, they've been, you know, wondering and looking for this. It's built into us to want something better. We don't know what it is. Well, here it is. And everyone is going to get it right there. It's what we have built into our psyche. Revelation 21, verse 9. It was saying earlier, but I want to read through it. Revelation 21, verse 9. Because this is the very end. This is what everybody, this is where it's going to all accumulate after all this is said and done, and those hundreds of billions of people make their decision, and we're rooting for them, right? Christ didn't come to condemn the world, right? But to save the world. A lot of people don't understand that verse. So what he came to do was not to condemn hundreds of billions of people to burn forever in hell. He came to save hundreds of billions of people. It's their choice. It's a great choice. And they haven't made it yet, but I pray they make it. And I think a lot will. But this is the very end. After all that happens, after the choices are made, after everyone says we want something better, here is the best we will ever have. And this is like the beginning of something even better. Revelation 21, verse 9. Verse 10. It says, "And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the great city." Right? The city that Abraham was waiting on. The city that we're... Everybody's waiting on. Everybody's waiting for the city. Everybody. They don't know it. We know it. Everybody's waiting for this. And he carried me into the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. And again, this is maybe physical, but this is very spiritual representation of man in Christ and what God has for his family. This is talking about the family of God and the fulfillment of the wonderful, this wonderful plan that God has in his family. And this right here describing the city is talking about us as a family, talking about the world. And show me the great city, having the glory of God. Verse 11. Her light was like a most precious stone, like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. Also, she had a great and high wall with 12 gates, with 12 angels at the gates and names written on them, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. Down to verse 14. Now the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And he who talked with me had a gold reel to measure the city, its gates, and its wall. A city is laid out as a square, its length is the greatest breadth, and he measured the city with a reed 12,000 furlongs. Its length, breadth, and height are equal. Right? That's huge. Then he measured its wall 140 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of the angel. The construction of the wall was of jasper, and the city was pure gold, it's clear as glass, and it goes, you know, it gives all these dimensions and of this wonderful city. Which, you know, something physical, but really it's the spiritual. He's talking about the people, the bride of Christ, the his family, in these terms, right? So, and we read in verse 22, but I saw no temple in it, right? So we're seeing this described as a city. There's no temple in it. For the Lord God Almighty, this right here is something better. Something great. Something better. This is something great. Something the best. This is the best. We went from better to best. You can't get better than best. That's the best. The best thing ever is right here. But I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God Almighty, the Father, and the Lamb are its temple. The city has no need of the sun or moon to shine in it. Who needs the sun and moon when you have the God with you? You have the Father in Christ. For the glory of God illuminated it, the Lamb in its light. And the nations of those who are saved, the nations, right? The nations, all the different nations we think about who want to go here and go here. We talk about all over the world. Every single nation, all the nations of those who are saved shall walk in its light. Hundreds of billions is what I imagine. And the kings of the earth bring their glory and honor into it. They bring what they have into this. Its gates shall not be shut all by day, and there is no night there. And they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations. Again, the nations into it. I want to be a better person. I want to be a better person. And I've been made one by Christ. We've been made better people by Christ. And we are a better nation. We found that something better. And the good news, the wonderful news for the world, is that there's something tremendous for everyone. Till we meet again.